Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness, the awakening of our spirit, and the transformation of our world. And I've just come back, actually I'm still there, from a whole retreat, a whole weekend of something called Contact in the Desert at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center in Joshua Tree, California, a beautiful resort place, retreat center. And I'm here with the director of that retreat center, Victoria Gavoyan.
Pleasure to be here.
And Victoria herself is a great teacher. She's been a student of metaphysics, spirituality. You've studied with some of the greats.
Yes, being at the retreat centers, I'm really privileged, actually, to be around all these amazing people that come from all over the world to show their teachings. And there could be anywhere from, 15 people all the way up to 5,000 people will come here for various things.
And this place was started as a spiritual retreat center. Give a little, could you mind, Dingell May?
Go ahead. The history goes, there's the founder, Edwin J. Dingell, who back in the early 20s, had discovered, or rather was compelled to go into Tibet. And while there, he noticed that there were certain individuals that were being given great reverence to. So he said to himself, well, look at these individuals. They're doing these amazing feats. Like when they walk, they seem to float on air. They were able to take a seed, an orange seed, and grow an orange in their hand. I mean, they were doing some remarkable feats. Finds out that they are these Tibetan lamas. So he climbs the mountains of Tibet, almost dies. And when he gets there, they ask him what took him so long. They thought he was their brother who had passed on. And they thought that he was the reincarnation of him. So they started to ask him questions, just like the Dalai Lama was asked, which one was the previous lama's clothing, articles, or favorite pieces of his. Anyway, he got the questions all right, and they said, oh my gosh, he's come back. The only thing is, he's an American. And at that time, they were not really embracing the West. So, but they knew now this was a symbol or a sign. And so they then welcomed him in, taught him these amazing breaths. There is 8 key breaths to it. And he brought it to the United States later and he brought it up to about 250,000 people worldwide. Now today in India, one of his students had gone to India early on. There's over 250,000 students in India alone, and they call it Brahma Vidya. They still call him Guru Dingell May, which was the given name. His real name was Edwin J. Dingell. The interesting thing about him, though, is when he was there, he had mapped all of China, and it was the first mapping, and he wrote this incredible volume of where China would go financially and economically, agriculturally, and there's this whole study. So this book went for about $500 back in those time each, and that's how he became a millionaire. And then he got Frank Lloyd Wright involved to help him build this so-called City of Joy, which would be at that time completely off the grid.
Right. And it is a beautiful place. So Frank Lloyd Wright has designed these beautiful structures. And the son of Frank Lloyd Wright has designed these beautiful structures here in Joshua Tree. And it's become a center of awakening, of consciousness. And Victoria runs this. But you are now also the inheritor of that breath, that Dingell May breath.
Absolutely. And they really are interesting. When I first came here 10 years ago to help turn it around, there were people from all over that came in, and these individuals were in their 80s, 90s, and hundreds, and they were so vital. Like when they shook your hand, you'd go, oh my God, they were so strong. They were old,
I met them when it was the Mental Physics Institute. The first time I was here was 1983.
With Rampa,
and it was the Mental Physics Institute. These two sweet little old people were running it, and they were probably the last students of Dingell May.
Yeah, just about. Well, and as they were growing, I mean, as they were coming in and going, I said to myself, well, I want to know what they took.
So what is it that they, what is the secret to the breath? Okay. What is the key?
All right. So this breath work, which is very simple, actually, they have what they call the secret switch.
The secret switch?
Yeah, the secret switch.
Oh, you never told me that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
where you put your tongue on the upper part of your root, which has about 900 different acupressure points. And it's a certain stance. It's a certain stance that you do. So the combination of the breath, the stance, and the positions that you use the breath with actually work. Mm-hmm. They even have a creative breath where you literally take your arms like this. You put them out in front of you.
Right.
You close your fist down on the vision. You inhale the vision.
Uh-huh.
And then you press it up against the glands underneath near your arms.
Mm-hmm.
And you literally focus in, you're holding your breath, and you're focusing in on your vision.
Oh.
And it's just amazing.
So wait, how does the breath go? Give me a simple breath. So put your tongue to the roof of your...
Uh-huh, like,
move your mouth. Your
and tongue. So when I breathe in,
you're breathing
with my nose,
you breathe in through
I'm
your,
not going to exhale.
Wait, but you breathe in
through my mouth.
You breathe in with your mouth closed
mm-hmm.
through your nose,
right?
With your tongue to the root.
Uh-huh.
And then
when I exhale, I'm going to exhale like this. I push when I do this, like kind of like a choo-choo chain.
That's like the Rantha consciousness energy
yes,
breath.
Well,
have you ever seen that?
Yes, and where do you think?
You think Rantha got it from Dingle?
Absolutely. That's where they were. They came here.
They
first.
Did come here,
yeah.
But that was years later. They did. So what does that simple breath do for you?
It's about creating. Well, one of the most important things you have to understand about this breath is this. These eight key breaths basically focus on the glands. That's the pineal gland, pituitary gland, the thyroid, the adrenal glands, all the glands, the pancreas. These are this is the beauty about this breath. You know, when you do other kind of breath like Kundalini breath and all that, it's really the focus on the energy centers. Okay?
Right, on the chronic field.
Right.
Or what, this affects the endocrine glands.
This one focuses on the endocrine.
How does it do that?
Because of the positions. That's it. The unique positions that you're in. And they're so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel, and like any, even senior citizens can do this breath work. And you have no pain in your body.
Really?
You can see a difference after only 3 days.
Do you do
Seriously.
This? Do you do this
every day?
No wonder you have so much energy.
I know.
She does an incredible job here running the center. I mean, it was nonstop. How many hours of sleep did you get the last 3 days?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I think I in 4 days, I slept maybe 6 hours.
I'd be a zombie.
I know. No, I'm fine.
But I know
fine.
You are because you do the breath.
Yes, exactly. Well, the only reason why I did that, I had so few hours of sleep. It's because I was basically involved with the production of the Contact in the Desert, which is a big conference here.
Yes.
That we just ended just yesterday.
And it was a beautiful conference. But I'd like to talk about that, but I do want to finish the breath thing because I think the breath thing, by revitalizing the endocrine glands.
That's right. Are your invisible, they call them your invisible helpers. Because if your endocrine system is off, right, your whole body's off. But there's one thing that's really interesting about this. When you do Kundalini breaths, generally speaking, you will raise yourself up and you're in a high.
It's
a high. It's what people really love about it. In this breath work, it's really interesting because of the stance, because of the positions, because of the intent behind it and the focus. It basically, you feel like you're connected up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in more of an umbrella effect, like you're everywhere. But you also have a great sense of being grounded. Like you could feel the earth beneath your feet.
Now, how does that work? So you're doing this little breath with this out thing. What is the is it a physiological thing that's activated?
Right. When you breathe,
right.
you're
Regular
taking in
breath.
Three things.
What am I taking?
Oxygen,
mm-hmm.
right? Air.
Air.
Right. The oxygen goes to the blood. The air goes to your lungs, right?
Right, right, right.
And prana.
Chi, that life force in the air.
Ah, that's what people think.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could just hold that thought, hold that doubt for just a moment, and you could look at it this way. You've got a three-dimensional physical body, right?
Okay.
So we've established that, which is what you want to vitalize.
Uh-huh.
But you also know that light is a five-dimensional thing. They just found that out,
What does that mean, it's five-dimensional?
Light itself, right? The light that we see emanating from the sun, the light bulb, all this, is a five-dimensional thing.
What does it mean to be five-dimensional? I don't understand that.
Hold on. Okay. Five-dimensional, let's stay with this, and then we're going to go back to that.
Yes.
Five-dimensional light cannot be separated from life. Okay, yes. Got that? Yes. So light cannot be separated from life itself. So therefore, life, that animating force, is also five-dimensional.
Okay.
Okay, so we've established that intelligence is five-dimensional, that light or intelligence
What do you mean by five-dimensional? I know
You know the three-dimensional world.
Yes.
And you know four-dimensional space, right?
So time, that,
otherwise,
time, space.
If you didn't have the fourth dimension.
Of time.
Time and space, yes.
Time, space.
Right, right.
Okay.
We're not even going to go into time yet because if you look at pre-Big Bang and that time didn't even exist. Space
it did.
Right,
so
no form.
So there was no dimension.
Right.
It was dimensionless.
But as the dimensions evolve, right, if you had a three-dimensional form, if you don't have the fourth dimension, that third dimension would be frozen in that three-dimensional space. A three-dimensional form is frozen within three dimensions of
right.
space. So you need the fourth dimension.
You need the movement.
That's right. To
right,
move in
the
space.
Time, yes.
So they've got space to move around in, right? Mm-hmm. A three-dimensional that.
Right.
Well, you got a three-dimensional body.
Right.
And you've got five-dimensional animating force, life force.
So
it wants to penetrate that body.
The life force is a fifth-dimensional essence.
Exactly.
That animates this body through time and space.
Right. But what is it used as a vehicle? And that's where prana comes in. Most people think that prana is the animating force itself.
Oh, you're saying the life force uses prana.
Right, to go into it because prana is a fourth dimensional.
Oh.
And only the fourth dimension can penetrate the third dimension. You need the fourth.
Oh, so
five-dimensional life.
So consciousness itself can't penetrate. Consciousness activates the prana to be embodied.
Consciousness or any kind of intelligence is five.
And
it needs prana in order to
be embodied.
That's right.
Because without the prana, we're nothing. We're just mass.
Exactly.
And without the consciousness to empower the prana.
Without the intelligence, right.
All right. So that now I understand five dimensions.
Right.
Thank you.
But let's go beyond that now.
Okay.
You've got consciousness. And even within every state, right, of existence, there is it goes from 0 to 100% before it evolves to the next, right? So you look at consciousness somewhere along that line, depending on the intensity of one's consciousness. Somewhere in that 0 to 100%, as it moves up that ladder, it becomes pure awareness.
Mm.
So fifth dimensional intelligence, just think of it as a sea of living intelligence that can only love. That's it. It is a purely selfless state.
Mm.
So the self or the ego uses consciousness to break things down, chop things up, and create its world, right?
Mm.
But as you move up higher in the ladder of evolution, awareness, that think of it like this. Consciousness is the electricity that lights up the bulb, your mind, or brain, right?
That's consciousness is using our mind.
Right. But awareness is the hydroelectric system that makes the electricity.
That makes consciousness.
That makes the electricity or consciousness that lights up the light.
So let me see if I can integrate awareness, because people use awareness and consciousness interchangeably. But you'll see that they don't. But
what they do is they go, well, you know, he was conscious of it, and then he became aware.
But you're saying awareness
is a much highly elevated
precedes consciousness.
It's the highest form of intelligence.
Awareness.
There's different kinds of intelligence.
Mm-hmm. So, but awareness, I'm just trying to integrate that. Awareness is the overall cosmic principle. It is
the great intelligence, the love intelligence of the source itself.
Okay, I got it. That's what you're calling
it. It's unlimited.
That's awareness.
Right.
Now, out of awareness, consciousness emerges. Would you say that?
That's right. But only when it's given an ego or a self.
Okay.
And it's only so that it can identify itself. You understand?
Because
consciousness needs an identity.
Awareness has no identity.
Awareness is a purely selfless state.
Right.
It doesn't need an identity because it is all.
Awareness awareness. And so out of awareness, I'm just trying to get this.
Right.
The singular, the being or the sense of self emerges.
Right.
And that sense of self is consciousness.
But that's only when it wants to divide itself. You see, in the beginning, when it's all one in a state of purely, you know, pure one state, it doesn't need a sense of identity because it's only one. But the issue comes along that this oneness, this purely selfless state, is also the only thing that it can do is share its love. Well, it has nothing to share its love to. So what it does is it divides itself into the infinite fractions, and it is consciousness that sustains those infinite fractions.
And we're each of those infinite fractions, each one
of
us.
Those are the self, that's right.
So it goes from awareness to consciousness to prana.
Right.
Because consciousness needs the prana to be embodied into the three dimensions.
That's right.
So that's six levels then, right? There's the three dimensions.
Because it becomes a living state. Yes.
Or is it seven? It shouldn't be seven. There's
three. Oh, no, it keeps going further than that.
No, but we have awareness at the top, though.
Awareness is an intelligence. It's not a, it's an intelligence. It is a, how can I say this? It's hard to explain. Intelligence, you can't really, I mean, awareness, you can't really say in its purest form, I'm saying. Mm. You can't really say it's anything less than the purest form or state of being.
Of totality, of all that is.
Right, exactly.
It predates the stars and the universe itself.
Right, but consciousness is used by the ego or self to be able to, it needs that sustaining in that individualized state so it can experience life in its own being.
And that's what we're here to do. We're here to express consciousness in the form.
Exactly.
So getting back to the breath. So
that does is that centers you on both levels. And that's what's so beautiful.
The level of consciousness and awareness.
And awareness, right. So you're aware of the greatest heights that you can possibly be a part of.
Which is
source.
The dissolving into the totality of all there is.
Well, it's the field.
Right.
It's being in the field.
And that's.
And at the same time, though, you're experiencing the earth-like vision.
Individuation.
Of individuation.
Right. So we are the totality, and we're also. And people forget that because people realize they think they're only the individual.
Well, look at the world. I mean, it sucks you in. It makes it so real. It feels real. It tastes real. Everything. And we forget to realize that we are everything. I know this sounds kind of strange.
No, it doesn't sound strange.
But we really are all. It is just a dream.
I know it is.
And when you awaken this. You only dream yet another.
I know, but why does it feel so real? You have pain.
Sensors.
You have emotion, but even emotional dramas.
Right.
When you feel that, that feels real.
It does.
It is real on one level, level of the third dimension.
That's only if you want to live there.
Right. You don't have to live there.
You don't have to embrace pain and agony.
Right. On another level, you observe it and say, oh, that's an interesting sensation.
Exactly. And, but you're owning it the moment you identify with it.
Owning it gets you... off,
gets you into it,
but it also gets you off the cycle of the drama.
No, we're talking about owning the dream, owning the image that you are in pain and suffering.
Yeah, when you own it, it gets you off the cycle, the wheel of that, the inducing it over.
Well,
if you haven't owned
it,
it keeps it going.
Okay, watch this. If I take this pencil and I put it into your hand, let's put this into your hand,
thanks,
right?
Thanks.
You're owning that right now,
I own
and because you own that. You are sensing everything about it. Mm-hmm. You're sensing the eraser. You're sensing the point. You can feel the hardness of the wood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're owning that. Mm-hmm. But if I don't own it, and I look at this
event. Oh, you can't feel it, you're saying.
Right. If I watch the event go by me and I don't own it, guess what? I don't attach myself to it. And because I don't attach myself to it and I don't own it, it goes by. I can let it go.
It doesn't affect you.
Right. And my body doesn't memorize.
Oh, so you're saying by holding it.
Right. You're stuck with it. You're living with a pencil in your life.
Well, okay, and I don't want one.
Right. If you want a pencil, then that's fine. But always remember this.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you manifest in a three-dimensional world, you've got to sustain.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
If you want it, yes.
Now, if you keep wanting this and wanting that and wanting those and wanting everything, you're going to have to sustain all of that. And that's what exhausts you.
That's what exhausts the body.
That's right.
And the endocrine glands get
because
depleted.
Because your consciousness has to sustain all that it creates.
Mm.
Now, when you go to sleep at night, your consciousness light is out, right? Because it's exhausted itself.
Right.
Because consciousness has no way of replenishing itself.
Right.
But awareness does.
How does it do that?
So your awareness sustains it by that little pilot light that's going on in your brain, right? There's a little pilot light. little light. And what happens is that even though your conscious light is out, mm-hmm. you're still aware that if I told you, oh, there's a thief in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. I guarantee you, you'd be
aware.
Absolutely.
Right. So
you're aware in a sleep state, consciously, unconsciously aware.
So that's why, that's interesting, because it clears up a little question I had, because when I'm aware that I'm dreaming mm-hmm. and I'm tired,
right.
but if I go to that little awareness
right.
that then I'm replenished.
That's right.
Instantly.
That's right.
Because you're saying source,
right.
which I've
is over- infinite.
But
is and awareness is the intelligence of that source, and that's also infinite.
So we have source and awareness mm-hmm. as two
as intelligence of the source.
Awareness
and consciousness is the intelligence of the self.
Now,
remember, differentiate. We as humans have a self, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that self uses consciousness to create its environment, right? Awareness is infinite.
Right.
Right?
So,
it's not in an individualized
So
state.
When we transcend the self,
right.
which means we transcend
right.
consciousness, we
That's
gain
right.
awareness.
Right. And when you meditate, such mm-hmm. as like in Dr. Joe's work,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You shut down the three parts of the brain that's all thinking. You work in the frontal lobe and you start to build from there.
Right.
And you go into that state where it becomes more real in here and you move into the field.
Mm-hmm.
You are in a state, you're moving toward a state of awareness, a state of oneness.
That's
a
why
state
people.
Of formlessness.
That's why people go into caves and
that's
meditate
right.
to
exactly.
gain, to
so
overcome
no,
the consciousness.
So there, that's right, to overcome the consciousness and with no distractions.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment that you become focused on your body, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you focus on your time, it's
right.
over.
So to get back to the breath,
mm-hmm.
you're doing this special breath. Now, how
right.
does that connect to awareness and consciousness,
right.
this breath?
Just breathing alone.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Shuts down. Different parts of the brain that are always active and relaxes the body because you're oxygenating it,
uh-huh.
right? And
well,
all
we're
of a sudden,
breathing all the time anyway.
We do. We
but
breathe.
Awareness, you're saying,
That's
of the breath.
Right.
Okay, awareness. The awareness of the breath.
It's the awareness of it and the focus and intention behind it, the feeling of it. See, this is what's so interesting about this breath work.
Uh-huh, tell me.
The complete focus was always on what does it feel like?
Uh-huh.
So most people, when they're breathing and they're practicing their breath work, mm-hmm. they're not really focusing on what it feels like. And I remember this one story that Dr. Joe said he said, there were three groups, right? And the first group,
this
he says,
Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Yes. Oh, he says, well, you know, we're going to create, they said, here's the test tube and we've got DNA. So he tells the first group, okay, think about it. Use your brain now. Focus on it. Think about how it could unravel. Do it with your minds. Unravel it. It didn't work. The second one, he says, okay, feel it, love it, you know, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
all emotional and you want to feel it unraveling and
right.
all that. Encouraging
it didn't work
it to,
either.
It didn't work either. But then the third group, it said, use both the mind and the emotion.
Oh, you need the two together.
That's right.
That's what I feel.
Yeah.
We need the heart and mind.
That's right. Exactly.
It's great to be all heart, you know, but it's not functional
no.
in the world.
And no. You know what? It can be functional because if you don't, again, I use that word own it, if you
yeah.
don't become attached to it,
mm-hmm,
right,
mm-hmm.
then it doesn't really matter. You
right.
can keep moving onward
mm.
because we're creating our environment every moment of our lives.
Mm.
Our bodies memorize, literally memorize our emotional attachments to different things in our life. And all it does is send out a signature into the field that says, hey, we want you again, pain, or we want you again, because we start to identify with those things.
Right. So if now let's go back to now that we laid that out, if mm-hmm. we use this breath,
mm-hmm.
we put the tongue
mm-hmm.
to
right.
the roof of the mouth,
mm-hmm.
you breathe in through the nose and you breathe out with a force
and
like
that,
a
right.
shh,
right.
then how does it connect to all those levels? That seems like just a simple breath.
It's the positions.
Tell
because
me
your
about
body,
that.
Oh, it's really interesting. Okay. So for instance, you know, your heels, in pretty much most of all of the breaths, your heels are together. And that's a very grounding influence.
Mm-hmm.
The buttocks are tight, okay?
Right.
It's not about the rectum or anything. It's about the buttocks being tight. And different breaths.
To hold the energy in.
That's right, exactly.
Okay.
But the unique thing about this is that as soon as you exhale.
Right.
In these specific forms, right?
Uh-huh.
In these exercises, you focus on the feeling, what it feels like after you've exhaled.
Just a simple feeling.
That's right.
Right.
And it's not simple because when you breathe in this manner,
uh-huh. I'm listening.
You get this rush to the head that is so amazing.
Mm.
I mean, it's very addictive. I mean,
how long do you do this breath for?
The whole thing, 8 key breaths take around 20 to 25
minutes.
How many?
80 breaths? 18?
No, no. There's 8 key breaths.
Oh, 8 key breaths. So the first one.
Right. And you do 2 of each.
You do 2 of each breath.
Yeah, exactly.
So the first one was you breathe in, move tongue to your mouth.
Right. And then again.
You blow it out. Shh. But well, you have to, is there other body?
There's 8 different forms. There's 8 uh-huh. different positions that you use. There's 8 different, it's different. Mm-hmm. All of them are different from each other.
Okay, so, and you're actually writing about this.
Yes. And I am also teaching it. I go online, and the next classes begin, or the next set of classes begin, I'm forgetting, it's June already.
June
2nd.
June 2nd.
It will begin on the Wednesday. It'll be every other Wednesday.
What website?
Yeah, beginning on July. You can go to jtrcc.org.
That's Joshua Retreat Center.
Yeah, Joshua Retreat Center,
That's where you teach the course.
Yeah, jtrcc.org.
So this was just the first breath you told me
about, the very
first breath.
Right.
Now, how did Dingle May study with the lamas told him this, that he brought this back to
and
the West?
And then brought it back to the West.
And you're the last one of this lineage carrying this on?
No, there are a few others that are alive.
Very few.
Not too many.
But no one's actively teaching this.
You know, it's really interesting. That's one of the things that I'm going to be focusing on this year is that to start really developing that aspect. I mean, it really works because people probably wonder, well, I don't understand. If this stuff works so well, why don't you have more people teaching it? It's because basically when I got here, there was no one for years teaching it.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
And how did you learn it? Through?
Well, I learned it through, I studied with this one woman, and then what I did is I just started reading and studying up, and I had access to all of his works here, being
because
here.
Because you're here.
Yeah,
and
I am
you're,
here. So.
And actually, he created this as a center, in a sense. You're the holder of the center.
It's just that after he passed away, there was no one to take over, and that's where I came in.
You did.
Yeah.
But he died when?
He died in the 60s.
Right. Yeah. And it kind of flounders.
Yeah, floundered for a while.
And then you created a real vision for
this. Bringing it back now, and I'm very excited about it, but more in the digital age and all that.
Right. But you're doing a beautiful, beautiful job. The workshops that happen here, I mean, it changes people's lives.
Right. Absolutely. Well, he said he wanted to create a sacred space where great leaders would come, and we have. We've had amazing people come here. And then, of course, look at all the different events we have, the different festivals that we have here. The Bhakti Fest and the Shakti Fest, the Satnam Fest.
And the Contact in the Desert.
Conference.
That will change people's minds.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But before we get to Contact, I do want to talk to Contact, definitely. I want to talk about Marie Bauer Hall, other teacher, because that is a gift to have studied with
Manly P. Hall's wife.
Yes.
Wow.
And Manly P. Hall was quite a mind. He was a genius. He was a spiritual genius. Yeah. I mean, along with Madame Blavatsky, there's Manly P. Hall, who wrote, what's that book, the thick book?
Secret Teachings of All Ages.
That is a classic.
Yeah, it is a classic. I mean, all of you out there listening in, if there's any kind of subject that you want, esoteric subject that you want to know about, this guy would take, and this happened in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
You know, he had access to the pages, actual pages from the Tibetan Book of the Dead. I mean, he was collecting works when nobody was there.
And he brought it to the West. He was the first to bring a lot of the concepts to the to the West that we are now in this new time embodying and living by.
Right.
It began with him and Blavatsky. They were the
I'm sad to say, though, a lot of people aren't getting it anymore because, it's in book form.
But they are getting it because it's now being embodied. They don't have to read
That's
it.
That's true. That's true.
So we're bringing it, like those young kids in their 20s that were here. They didn't have to do all that research.
No,
it's already given.
Exactly.
We've done the groundwork, and Manly P. Hall did that, and you've embodied it. So now we can bring
incorporate it into our lives
and into the collective psyche. So other people, they might not read the books, but the knowledge.
They call it the collective unconscious.
Right.
Unconscious.
Yeah, it's a collective because the knowledge of the psyche that's running the new world, this world we're coming into, is already embedded in that consciousness.
Exactly.
But when you study
and their DNA
and it's in the vibe.
Right.
in the vibration of the earth itself,
right,
and their vibration.
But we're leaving all forms anyway. I mean, think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're moving. We are ascending. I mean, we're learning not to be attached. We're embracing, you know, ideas that are Buddhist and Taoist and Christianity. And you see almost a unique mixture of this beautiful thing that's happening right now, where, you know, Christianity, Christians are meditating and all that. And you would never hear that word before.
It's true.
It was more about contemplation then.
Right.
And now they're actually using the word meditation, which is really great.
That is a big change for our planet, the merging of East and West.
That's right.
But I want to know, you were sitting at the feet of Marie Bauer Hall. What was that like?
Because
he was very evolved, but how did they meet, and what was she like?
You know, she told me the story about how they met and how she was waiting in the train station in New York? Yeah, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And she had just missed the train, and a man in a dapper outfit. He had like a hat on.
He was
and
a dapper sort of guy.
Came, saw her standing there alone because she had just missed it, and he said to her, "Young lady, there's this thing that's going on." He handed a little pamphlet, and it's going on down the street here, blah blah blah. And then what ended up happening is that she said, "You know, there was so much time in between the trains." She thought, "Well, I'll just go visit it and see what it's about, and then come back." And there was Manly P. Hall. Now, you know, Manly P. Hall was 6 foot something, right?
Was
and Marie was petite.
Oh, was she?
She was only 5'4".
Oh, that's
so
cute.
Yes,
how
exactly
cute is that?
So anyway, out of the whole crowd, she said she was up in the balcony and then came down later on. She was watching him from above, and the place was packed.
Mm-hmm. This was in New York in the 20s.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. And it was just packed, and then she was just leaving, and you know, he picked her out of the crowd, and he started talking to her. And started telling her how he was going to start a school in California. And she had a son.
Oh, she had.
And so when she found out that he had this school, she thought, oh my gosh, great. I mean, this is an esoteric school, but she was thinking that it was for young kids. So she went and said, okay, I'm going to move to California. She followed him to California. So it was a wonderful
story. But how did he become such an adept?
You know, I never asked that. Isn't that, should have. I should have. And I'm sure there's plenty of books on him.
Right. And books that he's written.
I was more focused on her.
Right. So
because she was a seer.
Tell me about that. So she goes out to California with her son.
Yeah. You look at Manly P. Hall. Manly P. Hall was a collector. He would then collect all these books and collect the information.
And
distill the information to its perfect essence,
right?
Okay, so you could look in any book, and if you want astrology, you've got it. If you want hermetics or you want alchemy, you're going to get it in its truest essence.
Right.
Marie was a seer. She was like a Nostradamus.
Oh.
She could see how the universe began.
She didn't know that when she followed him out to
No.
She just knew she had to.
That's right.
And then
while she was there, she in his library, remember, he'd been collecting for tens of years all of his important Rosicrucian works and alchemical works and all these things, original things. He had one book written by the hand of Count Saint Germain himself.
Really? Where is that book?
Okay. Book used to be in their private library.
Did you inherit that library?
No. It was bought out by other museums.
So it used to be the Saint Germain book.
What happens is that she goes in his library and finds a book that was basically written in the 1500s. Something about the book. The book described a vault that was buried beneath a graveyard in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Oh, right. I know this. Yeah, tell that. Yeah.
So what ends up happening is she goes to Williamsburg to dig up the vault, ends up fighting with the Rockefellers.
Because she wasn't allowed to dig up the... It's in the cornerstone at the University of Virginia.
She would rub it off the tombstone tracings. It was just like the movie... what's the name of that movie?
We mean the Raiders of...
No, it's I know all our guests are probably listening
okay.
in and they're
okay.
going, come on, say it.
The movie where you mean the movie that just happened, the Da Vinci Code?
No, not the Da Vinci, where they go into the tombstones and I forget his name right now.
And they rub the stones to get the clues?
To get the clues and everything. It was all clues.
Okay, but anyway, she goes to the University of Virginia.
She goes there to the cemetery there in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically, as a result of her search for this vault, begins to have visions on how the universe began.
But let me just say, the vault is the original works of Shakespeare, right? Isn't that what she's
more than that?
Oh, it's more than that.
Oh, yeah. It had information such as where the future of America would be.
Is this the
economically?
Yeah.
As well as spiritually.
Is this the vault of Saint Germain?
She never named that, but she did have a connection to Saint Germain.
Well, did she ever find the vault?
Well, you want me to ruin it for everybody?
Yeah, sure. No, I do, because we're listening.
Okay. Basically, what she does is she goes over there to dig up the vault,
mm-hmm.
and the first place they dig was the wrong place.
Uh-huh.
Okay, right? They've given up on her.
She's
and
a
they don't
seer, though.
Do
she's
it.
Oh.
But the only reason why is she had the wrong data.
Oh.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
And so what she ended up doing is they wouldn't let her dig again, so she went against them and went ahead and dug anyway.
In the dark at night.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Exactly.
And then?
And it was funny. She told me this story that, you know, she was digging in the dark. She was filthy, like, right?
And, this is in the 20s, 30s? Yeah.
And from the rubbing of the tombstones, her uh-huh. face was all white.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Right? Because she had to use chalk to do it in.
Oh.
And a young man was walking by, and he looked at her with the white chalk on her. He thought she was a ghost coming out of the
She told you that.
Yes.
She must have been a cute lady.
She was. She was great.
So what happened? Did she find it?
Nope, she didn't get a chance, because what happened is as soon as the day broke, she found the foundation of where, because remember it was buried, it says it in these anagrams that she
So the anagrams were on the tombstones as keys.
That's right, of where the vault would be buried.
Oh.
And so she used these tracings to do it. She did it with chalk.
Oh.
And so she found, so she used those tracings and it described how many feet, or they did call them feet. They called them something else.
Right.
And so she dug in that spot, and she ended up finding the foundations for the original Bruton Parish, which even the parish know that it even existed.
What is
existed.
Bruton Parish?
Bruton Parish is where this all happened.
So the vault is still there, you're saying?
Well, we don't know that.
I mean, or someone may have gotten it, you say.
Yeah, how do we know? Yes,
so,
exactly.
So she, but let's get back to her story,
sure.
because it's all fascinating, incredibly fascinating. She went out to California. She went to live or study with Manly Peel.
Right.
She never intended to marry him.
Right.
But she does, because suddenly she, how did she realize she was a seer and connect?
Well, as, like I said, mentioned before. Yeah. As she is studying all of these anagrams and she's getting these visions, you know, understand her intensity is so much, so powerful, right?
Yeah.
She starts beginning to have these visions of how the universe began.
Mm.
And she starts to draw these diagrams.
And she tells Manly P. Hall about it?
Yes, absolutely.
And they start, and he's fascinated because
he's
totally a collector,
he's a collector.
Of this kind
he
of stuff.
He collected her too.
And suddenly he has it in his home.
Right.
This.
So leaves her alone, lets her develop on her
own.
And she starts to do these different diagrams. Now, the diagrams then put her into a coma.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Put her into a coma?
A coma. In fact, when I first saw the diagrams, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I fell in love with them.
What is it?
I fell in love with them.
But what are they?
And so, let me tell you this little story. So this is, so when I get these diagrams, right,
uh-huh.
I'm looking at them. I want to replicate them,
uh-huh.
right? And there's a very specific way to replicate them. The squares and the lines and the this.
What are they diagrams of? Like sacred geometric forms?
Yeah, they're all geometric forms, but they're geometric forms that lie on top of each other
mm-hmm.
in a certain way that produces the dimensions as they come into being.
Oh.
So the squares represent space, right? The different dimensions.
Right.
And then the diamonds in those squares, right?
Represent time.
No, represent intelligence moving into that space.
The diamonds.
So as space expands,
uh-huh.
intelligence immediately fills it.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So which means there's intelligence throughout all of space.
Right, exactly.
There's nothing
there's no such thing as empty space.
Right. But anyway, so she, these visions of these diagrams right. came to her.
Right. She's downloading them and drawing all these diagrams on how the universe began. So I, no one understood it. So I finally broke the code. It took me
You
years.
Broke the code.
Yeah, finally.
Oh, because
yeah.
she, but she told you, but she went into a coma. Talk about that.
Yes. Oh, she, it was very interesting. She said when she was in the hospital.
Is this in the early times when yes. she was with Manly yes. before she married him? Or
This was before she married him. This is when she was... She had been married once before.
Oh, right. That's how she
so
has
the son.
This
was
in
the earliest. That's right.
Yes.
And then later on went into the, you know, went into the study of all this, mm-hmm. went into the coma. And she said that when she was in the hospital, her sister came
mm-hmm.
and to visit her. And she said that she would go in and out, and then it was when her sister grabbed her wrist where her pulse was,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it was like she triggered something that animated her and gave her life.
Brought her
but
back.
She was at, right. But I have to tell you something interesting yeah. about the diagrams. I'm going to have yeah. to show you how
no,
I do it.
No, I do
day.
Want to see the diagram.
Basically, you're starting off with a point in space.
A cross.
An X cross,
an
right?
X. That marks a point in time space.
That's right. The moment that the X has, the moment that there becomes a point in space,
mm-hmm.
energy comes into being. Okay?
Energy comes into being.
See, you have to understand, energy wasn't even there at that point.
Because mm-hmm.
energy is used for form, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is no form at that time. It wasn't until form was necessary in the universe. In other words, when that oneness divides itself into the infinite fractions mm-hmm. so that things could have form,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
That's when energy began.
Okay, so okay? that's where she began.
Now, watch this, though.
Uh-huh.
So you got the cross,
mm-hmm.
the X, I mean, right?
Okay, yeah.
That's the...
That's time, space, meaning,
right.
and that moment.
And that point,
uh-huh.
in that sense. Now, watch what happens. If you take a cross,
uh-huh.
and you start to move it,
yeah.
it produces... if you take the X...
And you make it into a cross.
And you make it into a cross, or is it the first thing here? Right. I'm so sorry. I'm confusing everybody.
No.
We're trying to talk really fast here.
We can take our time.
It's a cross first.
Yeah, one up, down
that's
line,
right.
and one horizontal.
Horizontal,
line.
Right?
One vertical one, and they
and
where they
your
need.
Point of energy.
Right. Okay.
When this cross
mm-hmm.
starts to move, look what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It creates an X.
Okay.
The cross is the divine feminine.
Oh.
The X becomes the masculine beginning. Okay?
The XY chromosome.
That's right. Listen to this. It's very important.
Uh-huh.
So even in the I'm sorry, hold on one second.
Okay, you take that. I'm talking here with okay.
Even in the beginning, the sperm.
Uh-huh.
Everyone, you, me, everybody is in a purely feminine state with masculine lying in a state of potentiality for the first 2 weeks of gestation.
So about it's that? All feminine until the masculine
that's
is activated
right. but the
into form.
The masculine is there, though.
It's in potential.
It's that's right. It's in a state of potential.
So everything is feminine until
so
the potential.
Right. So watch. So if I have my cross, and my cross moves to an X, right?
Uh-huh.
Starts moving.
Uh-huh.
That's energy for the first time starting to move into force. So now there's force now happening, right?
Okay. Now,
So each one, as we build this.
What makes the X turn, the cross turn into an X? What is the potential? Why does that?
Why did it move?
Yes.
I'm going to give it to you very simply.
Okay.
That oneness is a purely selfless state.
Yes.
Its nature is to give, to share its love. There is nothing to share its love with. So it yearns to make these dreams that it has had of sharing its love with these infinite creations.
It's a
state of love that determines it. It is a state of love that drives
that's
it.
That's what
and
moves
magnetically
it.
Draws it, yes. Because that, the magnetic is what is happening right
you
now.
You could
but
say
the
that's
electric,
beyond behind the torsion field.
Right.
That movement.
Right.
Is the torsion.
It's magnetic electric at that point. Before that, it's purely magnetic. But once it starts moving, it becomes the electric.
But why does love have to move?
Because it needs to shear itself.
Oh, right.
How can I, if I keep love to myself, mm-hmm. it's not moving, is it?
So love manifests
in others.
In others.
Love manifests in what you give, in what you share. Mm. It's a sharing of your own being that gives and
but
has
getting
love
back
manifest.
To Marie Bauer Hall, yeah. she understood that
oh,
and was
yeah.
able to, no, but design it, just like graph and map it out.
That's right.
Through these forms. That's she was right. able to map the movement of love into geometric space that could be felt.
And she said there were 9 stages and steps to creation.
Mm.
And she says everything's built in code, right? So, but she used the Roman numerals, right? And when it got to the 10th step, look at the word existence. X is 10.
Uh-huh.
It's built 10. Right in there.
X is 10.
Right.
X is 10.
Right. X is 10. 10 stages of steps, right? Uh-huh. Or the 10th, she didn't count as a step because it actually manifested in the 10th.
Because it's all the 10th.
And feminine.
So the 10th is the totality of all of it.
And it's creation itself.
Right.
Right.
So it is existence is the embodiment of the lower levels.
Right.
Of those.
Of all of the levels.
And the feminine
right. That's
is
the
right
stages.
Before we
That's
get
right.
to Ooh. The 10th.
You know what I loved is that she actually showed in these diagrams that time, right? You know why when we go back to, when we measure time, even today, every time we go back in time to measure how much time, right, it's always off. It's always a different number. Mm-hmm. And we can only guesstimate mm-hmm. about it.
Uh-huh.
The reason why is that when they send light back or when they do their whatever they're doing to go back in time mm-hmm. to find out how old this universe is,
mm-hmm.
every time they do it, they're going to different periods in that space. Eternal time
mm-hmm.
and eternity and time are two different things. Eternal time is when it is going through those 9 stages and steps, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. When existence is
right.
going through
those
9
states to come to manifestation, uh-huh. when form is ready to come in primordial matter, to become primordial matter.
Okay.
So it goes through the 9 stages and steps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by time it goes to the, in the first 4 stages, it's still in gestation. It hasn't come to manifesting. That's eternal time. But somewhere between the 4th and the 6th step, that eternal time divides itself into eternity in the heaven regions and time in the form regions.
Oh.
That's when space splits.
Into the limited and the infinite.
If you look at quantum physics, you will see that it splits right there. It's in, I believe, Michio Kaku's book, Hyperspace.
What splits right there? The time and the...
Everything splits.
The movement
space
of time.
Space and time splits. It's all one in eternal time at first.
Oh, I see. And then it's space-time before that.
Remember, space is only required for form, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as this 9 stages and steps are being created and being manifested and going through the process, space is also being created at the same time to allow it to be in its own space, right?
Right.
But so is time, because time is required to hold it together.
Right, because it can't exist in form without time.
Right. Okay.
Otherwise, it
sustains it. It holds it in space
yeah,
and
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I get
so
it.
So space is a space, and time is the, mm-hmm. is what holds it together. But the thing is that as all that's growing, so is intelligence. See, you can't look at as space expands, so is intelligence expanding.
Which is our evolution.
That's right.
Which was why we're in an evolutionary ascension.
That's why I don't worry about us.
You
because
know, I don't
as
worry
we
about
evolve,
either.
Right?
Yes.
And the natural state of our brain, and you know, the brain and the mind are totally different.
Of course, and consciousness is totally different.
Exactly.
Yes. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
So, but finish this thought, because I think it's
okay,
really interesting. That we have these levels, but with Marie Bauer, she discovered sort of the essence of existence.
Right.
In these 9 stages
and steps, right.
And so
and drew it out on these amazing diagrams.
And it sent her into a coma.
Right.
That's
now,
amazing.
Now, I'll tell you a story about when I did it, okay?
Yeah.
So when you tell me, don't use the diagrams.
Right.
Don't draw the diagrams.
Right.
I went into a coma, da-da-da, right? I'm listening to her say all this, and I go, I can't. Right. I have to draw these diagrams. So
Did you know where the diagrams were?
Well, my background was landscape architecture, so you can't tell someone who likes to do that kind of detail.
But how'd you find the diagrams?
She had them on little sheets. She had Xeroxed them, made them smaller. The originals were about 3 feet by 3 feet.
Where are those? Who knows?
Oh, I have. I think I have one or two.
Well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So you go down and you find them and you start.
So I get the little Xerox sheet, mm-hmm. 8.5 by 11 sheet, right? And you have to understand, when I first meet her, these things are everywhere in the house. They're deteriorating in boxes and files.
All these drawings
and all this stuff. So I'm looking at it and I'm going, oh my God, there's something here. Now, I don't understand a word.
How did you meet her? But that's a whole nother story.
Oh, no.
But,
when I met her, I met her in the bookstore. I owned the bookstore. Remember Alexandria Two Bookstore?
Yeah, in L.A.
In Pasadena.
It
was great. So,
she went into that bookstore.
No. A famous astrologer in England who came in was staying with her.
Uh-huh.
And so when she stayed with her, she basically came in to go buy some things. Someone else had given her a ride. And when she was leaving, she started to tell me things about me that I couldn't believe that she could see.
Uh-huh.
And so she says,
like,
I want to do your chart.
Stuff? Oh, Marie Bauerholzer.
No, this is the other
Oh, the astrologer. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then the astrologer, I help her to the car, this and that. And she says, you know, can I come back tomorrow and give you your reading, you know, from your astrology thing and your husband? I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So she comes back and she reads us.
Uh-huh.
And my husband tells my husband and I some things that were just incredible that no one could have known.
Right.
And then we take her to dinner. And then she proceeds to tell me that she didn't tell Marie she was going anywhere. So I'm thinking, oh my God. Just she probably thinks this woman has been kidnapped or something because somebody just left her off there and went on their way.
Oh, oh, oh.
So we said, well, we'll take you home. Now you have to understand, picture this. This is a rainy night. It's thundering. And it's just falling heavy, right?
Uh-huh.
Now I'm feeling the pressure of bringing this woman home to this place, or bringing her back to this place, where they're going to be upset because where have you taken this woman, right?
Yeah,
and I invited her to dinner and all this other stuff.
Right.
So I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Okay, so I go up there, and I'm walking to the home of Manly P. Hall, because he had just passed away.
And where was this home?
This was in Los Feliz area, California.
Okay, okay.
So what happens is that, so I get to the door, right? She knocks on the door. Marie opens the door. Now, I'm thinking she's going to explain the situation. Oh, here's Victoria. She took me to dinner, blah, blah, blah. You know what she does? She runs in the house and leaves me standing there in the dark.
In the dark with looking at Marie?
Yeah. It starts to thunder, right? It was like, you know, and I'm standing there and she's like looking at me and really kind of like,
Marie Bauerholzer,
what are you doing? Yeah, yeah. Like, what are you doing? And why didn't, you know, why is she coming in so late and all this other stuff, you know? So I'm thinking, oh my God, this is really invest. So I excused myself. I went off to the car. Now, to this day, I can't figure it out. I got back in the car and I went, I would never study with that woman even if you paid me.
You said that.
I know for some reason. Why?
Uh-huh.
I have no clue till today.
Uh-huh.
Why would I even assume that? I've never even had a teacher do anything like
that.
Right.
You never even think you would study with that.
No, why? Why?
So
who's gonna?
But
so the next day, I get a phone call at 7 o'clock in the morning. She tells me Marie wants to meet me. So I get invited over to her house. Now, here's the clincher. So we go in. It's a museum in itself. Okay, right?
Right?
He's
sure.
A collector. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So I go in. We sit down with her. She proceeds to explain the 9 stages and steps to creation. Now, I'm not going to kid
right
you.
Right there. First meeting.
Oh, right there. First meeting.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it was daylight when I sat down in the chair. But I can tell you this. I will always remember that I went into a coma when she was telling me it because I don't remember what she said. I don't remember the time going by. I only remember that it was light and now it was dark. That's all I could do. And I was in the most peaceful state when I came up out of this sort of hypnotic state, listening to her go through the stages and steps. And I was in a daze. I was amazed. I turned around to my husband. I said, Chuck.
He was with you?
Yeah. I said, did you just hear what I heard? And he goes, yep. But we couldn't repeat a thing.
Mm.
The language that she used, she didn't have quantum physics like we have today to explain and the things that she saw.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to make up her own language.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got this huge other language I got to memorize in order to understand what she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to give up. It's too tantalizing. There's just something there. You know it. There's no way anybody would spend 40 years of their life studying something to that extent as she did. She had volumes 10 inches thick she had written.
Oh.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
And these drawings were all over the house.
Everywhere. They were
these geometric forms. And
rotting
that,
everywhere.
And so you found them and you started to then...
I collected them. I trimmed off all the edges that had been eaten
but
away
by the
But
then you said you started
edges.
To do it. So what happened then?
Okay, so now let's go back now and forward
Yes.
So she tells me, oh, don't do the diagrams. Uh-huh. I get the diagrams. I lay it out all neat. Mm-hmm. Now, she called them geometrically trued. That they had to be geometrically trued.
Trude?
Trude. T-R-U-E-D.
Well, I don't know what that even
that
means.
That means it has to be precise. Geometrically precise.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Because when you were working with the divine, anything of that caliber, everything was calibrated to the T. Perfection.
Because
as each line lay on top of each other, it would tell you where the next circle would be.
Mm.
So if you were off in one part, you would be off everywhere else.
That's why you're so exact in
like
your PowerPoint and everything.
Right, exactly.
Because it's that vibration.
Vibration.
Now I understand what we're trying to do.
Exactly. Okay. Because then you get attuned to it at a
higher level. That's so, why you showed me what you showed me today.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I get that now.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
It's geometrically true.
Because it's also embedded
in you.
It's got
to touch the soul.
Mm.
The soul is geometrically
the
true.
The soul then resonates
yes.
with that harmony.
Right.
And if it's not in that exact harmony, right. it doesn't
absorb the information.
But it also doesn't go through the layers of the physical into the conscious, into the awareness. If it's off, it doesn't reach awareness.
It can't.
It will reach the visuals.
And the consciousness, which is...
But it won't get to
to
the God.
State of awareness.
It's only in the harmonics
exactly.
of the exact proportion
right.
does
the
it
universe is precise.
Does it become transcendent.
That's right.
It doesn't become transcendent if it's messy.
Einstein said it's in the details.
But that's what I'm trying to get right now. I think it's important. If it's messy, it doesn't...
It's not geometrically true.
It doesn't meet transcendence, though.
The universe is very precise. It appears chaotic, but it's not.
Mm, mm.
It's
so geometrically true.
Right. Meant that all the lines had to butt up against each other in a perfect way so that when it crossed a spot,
everything
would line up. It would tell me just how big the circles would be and how they would overlap one another.
No, I'm just trying to integrate that into dimensional realities
right.
itself. Because there's an exact precision to each dimension of thought we live
in. Right. Well, there's lines of life, that animating force,
mm-hmm.
and light
mm-hmm.
in every form in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
A form
mm-hmm.
doesn't exist without that fabric.
Uh-huh. This is real metaphysics. This is like the truth. How long did you study with her for?
Yeah.
I'm just talking here. To Victoria, we're almost at the end of this great conversation. Don't be sorry. No, I think this is fascinating because it's what you've given us. It's a real foundation with the Dingelmay stuff and Marie Bauer Hall.
We'll continue it, but
the foundations of metaphysics
is
just in what Marie Bauer Hall discovered.
Right. Exactly.
And no one talks, everyone talks metaphysically as a metaphor.
Right.
But no one talks about the hardcore meaning of metaphysics.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And the hardcore.
Beyond the physical world.
Right. And what it means to lay out in proportion a geometric shape that's transcendent.
So that we can see it. So that we can see it evolve.
And we feel the transcendence.
Yes.
We feel the transcendence.
Right,
exactly. So we'll wrap up because I think somebody wants to go to dinner probably. No, but how long did you study with Marie Bauer Hall?
With her every day for about 5 or 6 years. And then that's when I had made a decision to really start pulling it all together. In other words, Marie never, this is the clincher. Mm-hmm. Marie never repeated anything more than once.
Really?
No.
Because it would just come through
And it was
her?
Never in order.
Uh-huh.
And she would go, okay, in stage 5 this would happen, and 3 this would happen, and 1 would happen. But I had the technology to break it down.
Mm.
Because I had computers, so every time she started talking about step 1,
I just threw
it into the computer.
So you have this all, you have her teachings on?
I broke it all down.
Oh, did you have you publish this?
Yeah.
What book is that?
God as Mother.
And this is about Marie Bauer Hall's teaching.
Right.
What does God as Mother have to do with that?
All of this?
Yes.
Basically what she says Now, remember the diagrams, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know how in the greatest of alchemical and hermetic way at work, it says from the four come the three, and from the three comes all.
Mm.
Well, she said, this is the mystery of the four, which is the mystery of the Holy Grail.
Mm.
Is that the four, right? Out of these four aspects, which existed before form, before space, before time,
mm-hmm.
that essence, pure essence,
mm-hmm.
there were four aspects.
It's like the Yud Hey Vav Hey in some traditions, in Kabbalistic terms, yes.
And so that was, its makeup was of four aspects, right?
Okay.
Differentiated, but never divided.
The four elements, whatever you want to call it, yes.
And what happens is three of those elements are in a sleep state, right? Mm. In a state of potentiality. That's
okay.
The masculine. And then the fourth one, right, is the feminine, and that's aware, totally aware. That's the magnetic.
So that is the awareness that, going back to the beginning of this discussion.
It was always love aware.
Uh-huh.
And she would tell me this beautiful story of how it was dreaming.
Mm. So awareness, we go back from form to consciousness to awareness, is the mother.
That's right.
And what's activated in potentiality.
It's the masculine consciousness.
So the mother is the house of the agent that is active upon, of awareness that acts upon.
True intelligence.
That acts upon time, space to create existence.
Right.
Existence.
But it is still always a love awareness that holds this universe together.
Right. And
without,
that's why
it,
people don't have to worry about
those
other forces yet.
Right.
You don't have to worry about the gloom. Because always love
that
supports the foundation of all that is.
And evolution is innate. It's
innate,
and it'll always develop. And even though we're going through all of this pressure and hell, and the world is this and that, and all these things are going on, it's pushing us to come to the realization that we can no longer use simply consciousness to exist. It doesn't have the capacity to sustain us, to be able to keep us surviving. And we have to move more into a love-aware state, a more state of understanding that we are infinite in order to
that's
survive.
Where we're going. This is
we're
what I talked about.
And we're building new parts of the brain
to
be able to become its home.
We're moving into the sixth sun, or the and Robert Lawless says it's the end of the age of Kali Yuga, which is the, you know, moving into that pure awareness,
that's
or
right.
the Nagual state.
That's right. Remember, consciousness breaks things down and chops things up.
Uh-huh.
Awareness is infinite.
Is the unifying force.
That's the unifying force.
And so we're evolving in consciousness to be...
And physical, because our physical bodies are what is holding and is the container of that.
Right. So it's consciousness is ascending into finer and finer states.
That's right. Finer is the rarefied is another word.
Right.
It is too.
Right.
Becoming a more rarefied state.
I do want to go into this in more detail because you've laid the groundwork for a real metaphysical teaching.
Well, I don't know if it's real. There's lots of real stuff out there.
No, it's not so real because it's not as practical as what you're saying.
Well, you have to understand that
for me.
That for you. Exactly.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, because there's a lot of belief systems out there.
But you're not talking about beliefs. I mean, you in one way, but you're also talking about the structures of reality.
Right. Which is what I'm interested in.
Which is not about belief.
Right.
I mean, you could say it's belief, but if you look at it as a possibility, then the metaphysical teachings of Marie Bauerhol line up into a practical form that then can be used to generate force.
But you have to understand, if you can
presence.
Understand where you came from,
then
you begin to see where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you right now, I looked in a little book, get this, a little book that was written in the late 1800s, and it said in the future, it will be those who will be able to control their minds that will be in power.
Okay.
Now, where are we all going? Why all of a sudden this whole thing on meditation and the use of relaxation and focusing our attention and all of these things? There's a reason for all that. And there are different parts of the brain that are lighting up now.
More than ever.
That's right.
There are people waking up all the time.
That's because the brain that we have now is changing. It has to change in order for us to survive. We have to use other methods.
It is changing. It's changing for many reasons. The vibratory rate of the earth. We're moving into more of a cosmic weather. more radiation, which is sometimes good, that can activate our brains.
But again, remember this, that the brain itself, that physical brain has to change to be able to have the capacity to hold on to a greater love intelligence as well.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. The cosmic rays, the cosmic radiation, not the man-made radiation. Okay, that's awful. But the cosmic is activating the dormant, the potentiality of the brain to become, make us greater humans.
In a different way than regular radiation, yes.
Right. No, cosmic, it's different. Cosmic radiation is the force behind evolution itself. It's what changes the DNA with intent to create new forms. That's how flowers sort of developed overnight in the Cambrian evolution. And so this new sense that we're moving into is the sparking, it's the birthing of a new humanity.
Right. We will be, in the future, considered to be the missing link. Just as before we had it, we are the new missing link.
Well, that's great. No, I love everything you've said. And I love everything you're doing here at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center.
Thank you. And
we didn't get to talk about Contact in the Desert, which was 4-day festival of the best UFO researchers.
And now
let's throw that in. But how does these extraterrestrial, these other consciousnesses fit into the hardcore facts of embodied form of Dingle May and the gene and the Marie Bauer? I mean, just the fact that they're sentient in mind.
Right.
Relates them to us.
But again, remember, they may be sentient on mine, and they may have minds that are highly developed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know their emotional capacity.
Well, they don't have the, some people say that we have.
Right.
But they do have an understanding of existence that we don't have.
That's right, but we also have an understanding of who we are that they don't.
They don't, because they can't feel it. They can't feel the love.
We don't know what their extent is.
At least some of them can.
Right. We don't want to throw a blanket.
I'm talking about the grays.
We'll have them visiting us in China.
No, I think there's levels of consciousness that exist out there.
Yes, absolutely.
And there are very high, loving, beautiful forms. And there's other forms that are trying to understand the physical. So we're in a whole mixed universe. But what I did get from this weekend is that it's very, very exciting, the possibilities and the realities that exist once we step outside the box.
Absolutely. So, we have to. And once we step out of the box, we have access to the field.
And the field is anything you want to manifest with the potentialities that exist inside.
That's right.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm one of your students now. It's the lineage of Marie Bauer Hall and Dingle May. You're bringing two divergent lineages together.
Because Dingle May used to tell me this. He said that each one of us is like a spark, right? Mm-hmm. You're a spark of life, God, right? That divine source. And I'm a spark, right? When you breathe, you are fanning that flame.
Mm.
And when you fan that flame, it grows brighter. And when it grows brighter, it lifts us and raises. That's why breath work is so important. It fans that flame, lifts us up to our future.
Mm, beautiful. And you're also so practical. She really gets things done here at the Joshua Tree. So you have that integration. You have that.
That's the balance.
Yeah.
That's the balance.
Great. How can people get in touch with you?
You can reach me through the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. Or my website, God as Mother, as well. Either way.
God as Mother.
GodasMother.org.
Right. And how do you say your last name again?
Gavoyan.
Gavoyan. Victoria Gavoyan. You can find her here at the bookstore at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. It's a beautiful, phenomenal, peaceful retreat outside of Los Angeles, about 2.5 hours in the desert towards the National Park, the Joshua Tree National Park. Come out and visit. Come out and hold some retreats here. On this beautiful land, they have the capacity for, 300 people with rooms that hold?
Up to 5,000. Yeah. Inside the interior.
Yeah, the residential, 300. But there's lots of hotels in the area. Come have your retreats here. The rooms can hold, the Bhakti Fest holds 5,000 people here and growing.
Yeah.
So I feel really fortunate to have come and visited Victoria here and been a part of this amazing Contact in the Desert, which is another level of metaphysics that's opening our brain to untold potentials.
That's right.
That's the thing that I think the ET piece brings in. We have yet to know the unknown that these other consciousnesses are now making us aware of.
I think personally, to be honest with you, I really think that we can actually move even further than they.
I think so, because we have the emotional
capacity to do it. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we have.
I'm not saying we're there yet.
No. We have a lot of issues to clear up on the planet, but our capacity
and
is to be the divine.
And I think that's what's so interesting about our species.
Yeah, it's the capacity for the divine. Actually, that's what someone said this week about the Zachariah Sitchin book. It's like, we're not just here to mine gold. There was a controversy among the gods that created the DNA that were infused in the primates, that they gave us the potential to be divine. I mean, us. So we could keep mining gold, which was one half of the Anunnaki, and that's what a lot of people do. They're here making money mining gold. Or you can go and develop the divine, which creates the interior gold, you know.
Right.
That was the path of the alchemist. Which way you want to go? You want to...
Inner or outer alchemy.
Right. So we're here to manifest the higher realms, which creates a golden age. And that's where we're moving into in our potential.
Through our moving into our natural state of that infinite.
Mm. So. And it's our golden age of being. That's what we're moving into. Thank you, Victoria,
for having me.
One of my favorite guests here on New Realities.
It's a pleasure.
And for being
born in New York. So.
You were. There you go.
I miss it.
Well, this is an internet all over, but yes, I'm based in New York. But I'll have you back.
All right. Thank you. I would like that.
Okay. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And we're here at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. We're closing up this interview. We're finishing up the interview. And thank you for listening. Go to my website, newrealities.com. That's Paul Andrews who just came in. It's okay. We're just finishing up this whole weekend here. It was a beautiful weekend. Come out to the Joshua Tree Retreat Center sometime. It is a beautiful, beautiful place. Thank you for listening. You can find me at newrealities.com and look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks for listening.